You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game, it's very important, Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making us part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday, and today it is after the Boston Celtics toyed around with the Sacramento Kings and rode a big teeter-rozier game to a 104-93 win. We are the Rain and Jays. I'm John Corrales from RedsArmy.com and Boston.com. Sam Jam Packard, formerly of WEI, now changing the world in the criminal justice, really converting one criminal justice system at a time. It's very important nowadays if you follow any of the news. Coming up on this podcast, we've got today's game against the Kings. We've got Friday night's game against Portland to talk about. And Kyrie is, he had his procedure and he's out for a few weeks at least. We're going to talk about all of that, but let's start, Sam, with the big teeter-rozier game in this one. 33 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. He shot 12 of 16 from the field, 8 of 12 from 3. This is a holy shit, what a game. Career high for Terry Rozier.
Tito, 33 sticks, man. Like, he was one away from the Celtics record for made threes, trailing only, I think, Antoine Walker and Isaiah last year. Amazing quote from him post-game when asked if he knew he was one away from the record. He said no. If he had known that, he would have shot 5 more of them, which is classic.
That is awesome.
He was just great, and it's, I think, his, what is this, 22 consecutive games where he scored double digits, starting ever since when Kyrie went out the first time, when he's starting. Mm-hmm. And great thing about Terry Rozier is that he has all the talent in the world. It's really, I think, a confidence thing and about knowing what his role is going to be. So with increased minutes, we've seen his confidence go through the roof, and just him playing like this, the Celtics are going to need him, especially as we'll talk about later with a Kyrie injury. Like, they are desperate for scoring, and especially scoring off the bench. And he just does an amazing job, and you, at this point, any kind of three he takes, you have confidence it's going to go in. Even kind of wilder, more aggressive step back threes, pull up threes in transition. He's just been a very, very good shooter ever since kind of a bigger role was created for him. And so, and he's just a cool ass motherfucker. So put those two things combined, it's been real fun to watch.
Yes, that's Terry Rozier to a T. There was a moment there tonight, like, you already knew it was going pretty well, but there was a moment, what was it, in the third quarter where he was dribbling and Bogdanovich poked the ball away, and he tracked it down, came back and just took a couple dribbles and drilled it. And you're like, geez, that, and in the game, Scal was like, whoa. All right. That was the moment where you're like, this is everything this kid is throwing in. It's going in. So a monster game for Terry Rozier. And it really is continuing this kind of trend. He's taken a ton of shots and he's making basically all of them. I'm looking at his past few games. He's had like one bad shooting game. It was against the Pelicans. So that's probably my fault because I was there. So that's, he's had no bad shooting games this entire month, except for that one. So he's stepping up, and in Kyrie's absence and in Marcus Smart's absence, to have a guy like Rozier just find this groove It's amazing. It's super important to have that guy that steps up off the bench, and it makes you feel real good. Like, if Kyrie, and we'll talk about Kyrie in a minute, if Kyrie can't be back in time for the start of the playoffs, you got a guy in Rozier that just does not give a shit about the moment. He'll go out there and he'll play. And against a whatever that first round opponent is right now, it looks like it's going to be either Miami or Milwaukee. The standings right now have Milwaukee in seventh. Miami lost tonight, so they're in eighth. But either one of those two teams, I feel okay with Rozier being the starting point guard against either of those teams. Neither of those teams scare me.
Yeah, no, I absolutely think Terry Rozier can be your starting point guard and win a playoff series, a first round playoff series against either of those teams. The thing that's wild is that, I mean, Kyrie is obviously a much better offensive player in terms of isolation, just overall talent. But Rozier, I would say, is a much better defensive player. He had five steals tonight. He's a very good on-ball defender on guards. He plays with this tenacity, very aggressive. It pairs well with Marcus Smart. Maybe he can come back in the playoffs too. But that's it's something I feel like is overlooked in this scoring streak, is that he's been very, very good, played very well defensively. And it's kind of insane to say that, like, the South, I don't want to say they'll be better without Kyrie Irving.
Oh, don't say that.
I didn't say that, but having a plus defender at the point guard position is definitely useful for the Celtics. This team is definitely built on their defense leading the way. Scoring has always been a difficult thing. So if you're going to have a better defender out there, I think the Celtics can still be quite successful with Rozier as the primary person, especially in this hypothetical first round series we're talking about.
Yeah, I don't think it's a super hot take to say that Terry Rozier is a better defender than Kyrie Irving. Like, that's not a hot take. Like, everybody, for the most part, minus, I guess, Isaiah Thomas, is a better defender than Kyrie Irving. Although, you know, earlier in the year he was doing better, and you know, he's not horrible when he wants to be. So, but when you have a guy out there that is going to be tenacious and has the ability to get hot, then that obviously is going to be a big plus. And that's the thing with Rozier. It's the ability to get hot versus, you know, the kind of like question mark at the point guard. He can start shooting. You feel so much better with him shooting the three. It's amazing how he has evolved his shot over the years, because it wasn't that long ago. Like, his rookie year, he was a 22% three-point shooter. And then last year, he was just below 32%. And this year, he's at 38%, and that's only going to be increased by his shooting tonight, because this does not include tonight's game. So
I think it already went up. I think Mark D'Amico tweeted that he's already at 39.5% just based on his shooting performances tonight.
So there you go. So now you've got a guy who's pushing 40%, and that 40% is the magic number in the NBA right now. If you're a 40% three-point shooter, that's pretty damn good. Like, that's kind of elite-level shooting. So that's – we can deal with – like, obviously Kyrie is Kyrie. Like, he's a superstar. He's an all-star. He can
would rather have him on the court than anyone.
Right. But in the first round against a team at the bottom of the standings, Rozier, and obviously he's not going to carry this kind of level of play through, but Rozier, the way he has been playing over the past month, is acceptable. And I feel comfortable getting through a first round with Rozier at the point guard, especially if, you know, these other guys, like Morris didn't play tonight. Quick question as an aside, do you think Marcus Morris had a quote unquote sprained ankle because the Kansas game was on during the game? And he's like, oh, my ankle hurts.
I mean, yeah, if that was an excuse, why not? Him and Brad like to joke around about when they did the whole Super Bowl gimmick. So he had a hell of a performance against Portland, so I say he earned it just to be able to watch Kansas win. But that's the thing, is that it was nice to see Jaylen Brown back in the lineup tonight, because you forgot, like, how much the Celtics were missing him just on a defensive end. He returned from the concussion, and he looked a little wobbly to begin with. It felt like he fell down 85 times and got hit in the face 95 times.
How many times is he going to get hit in the face tonight?
I felt maybe we were just noticing it more because he's like a coming back from a concussion, but it felt like the first quarter was just him taking like elbows or just falling down.
Yeah, seriously. No, it was like over and over and over again. Like, can we please just protect this guy, put a helmet on him, something, some like boxing headgear. Anyway, as you were saying.
But he looked solid in his return. He knocked down some free throws, which is always great to see from him, but just his energy on the defensive end. He got some, got out in transition, got some dunks. He makes this team a lot better. You notice there was, I feel like for a stretch there, all the games just boiled down to, well, what are we going to do in the moments that Nader and Shemmy are in the game? And hopefully we can just survive Nader and Shemmy. And I don't even remember the Nade man, Ab Nader, being there like at all tonight. Shemmy, I only remember his performance because he had a pull up three off the dribble, which I was just not used to.
Yeah, that was special.
But as much as you take the focus away from Ab Nader and Shemmy, I think the Celtics are going to be in a better position to win. Is that a hot take?
No, that's not a hot take at all. Yes, playing without Abdel Nader on the floor gives you a better chance to win. I was just going to bring up.
Calls him as a CD.
That's it, man. You're, whew. Watch out there, Skip Bayless. I was just going to mention that Jaylen Brown said that he's probably going to hear it from his mom after the dunks tonight. She didn't want him dunking anymore. But this is from the Celtics Twitter account. He smiled and said he chose not to dunk in the fourth quarter. He had a breakaway. He had one of those the breakaways like he had where he got hurt, and he laid it in. So it was kind of an interesting little sidebar there with Jaylen Brown. So, all right. We'll get to some of the other stuff, but first I wanted to remind everybody, if you are not a subscriber to the Locked On NBA podcast, please go subscribe to that. It has now gone daily. And last week we had a conversation between the podcast network founder, David Locke, and Commissioner Adam Silver, which was a really good conversation, touched on a lot of things in a short amount of time. So go check that out and subscribe. I am the host of the Wednesday night show. So please go subscribe to the Locked On NBA. We're daily and you get a nice 25 to 30 minute show that kind of runs down the previous night, gets a couple of we talk about a couple of the big topics of the day and get you ready for that night's games. So it's good to get you ready, kind of get you set. When you walk into work, you can have everything kind of set for you. And even if you miss the games, the podcast host will walk you through everything and get you set for the day. We had a Portland Trailblazers game on Friday night. That was a wild, fun game that we haven't had a chance to talk about. The Celtics came back in that one, which, I mean, that game, I had no expectations at all. And they came back from and outscored the Blazers 38-23 in the fourth quarter to win that game 105-100.
Which is insane.
That in Portland, a team that was just on fire and is still currently the third seed out west, to do what they did. And I don't even remember who their fourth quarter lineup was, but it was a lineup. I know that it was a lineup that had never played together.
It was Horford, Morris, Tatum, Rozier, and Ojale, or was Yabu getting some burn there? I don't remember the Monroe. It was Shane Larkin. Shane Larkin was the guy who was getting all the – I forgot. I just looked at the box score. Larkin, he got 34 minutes.
Yes, he played 11
minutes.
He was
huge in that game.
I just called up the fourth quarter here. Larkin had he played 11 minutes in that game, and Yabu got 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. Shemmy got 7 minutes in the fourth quarter. Rozier, Tatum, Horford, Morris. I mean, that was a wild game. And really, first of all, Marcus Morris went off in that game. It's nice to see a healthy Marcus Morris kind of feeling himself a little bit. And that game was so great that you had Brad Stevens actually break character in the fourth quarter.
He was joyful.
He was
joyful.
Instead of, you know, the Kaizen process over result, he was very much enjoying the result.
Yeah, it was purely results-based because that wasn't the best shot that Mook took, but he nailed a three, a deep three right in front of the Celtics bench, and Brad was darn happy about it. Man, that GIF immediately got saved. That picture is going to live on forever.
Yeah, that one goes into the Hall of Fame. That's a good one. So look, the South.
But Mook Morris has had a run lately. It's too bad he didn't get to continue it tonight. But what he just has been unstoppable from 3-point land. That in the Portland game, he was 5 of 6, finished with 30 points. Was also 7-7 from the line. Like, he's been fantastic. If he take as long he needs to recover from this ankle, you don't have to play anyone against the Phoenix Suns. They could play literally the entire G League team, and I think it will be fine.
They should be.
Because I think Morris is going to be an important person, especially in the playoffs. He plays a very important role of the kind of a big. He's switchable, solid defender, and can create his own shot. He loves to create his own shot. Literally, that's one of his best skills. Some would say his best skill is creating his own shot, and you're just going to need like guys like that in the playoffs. So him having this week he's having has been impressive, and another reason I think Celtics fans should be definitely optimistic about first round of the playoffs.
So against Portland, 5 of 6 from three. Go back to Oklahoma City, 3 of 6 from three. Against the Pelicans, 2 of 4. Bad shooting night in Orlando, 1 of 5 from three, but 4 of 8 the game before that against Washington. Just shooting the lights out. He's been on fire, and I'm definitely guilty of kind of writing him off a little bit, because this isn't this hot stretch isn't necessarily who he is as a player. You're not going to expect a guy to score like 20 plus points a night. That's not the type of player that Marcus Morris is, but he's clearly capable of going off for stretches here. And I was of the opinion that, you know, he might get traded at the trade deadline. And it's a good thing that he's not. A good thing that he's still here, because he's been super important. And again, I think that he might have gotten that ankle injury in time to watch Kansas play in the Elite Eight. So he's got to celebrate Kansas beating Duke. And I, as a Duke hater, go ahead, at me, whatever. I don't give a shit. I don't like Duke. And I'm celebrating with Mook Morris.
Who should you?
Sorry?
You should. There's reason to.
No. I've chosen anti-Duke the whole way. When Duke played Syracuse, I was beside myself, and I had to. I actually am upset at Syracuse because they actually made me root for Duke, and I.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, because I couldn't root for Syracuse in that moment. I hate Syracuse too, so. That's all an aside.
You could have just ignored it completely. That's what I did. There's no winners there.
No, but the game was not. I was watching both games, so.
That's fair. I did see a gif of the Duke players slapping the floor before getting into a zone defense, which I thought that's funny. So obnoxious.
Yeah. Come at me. I'm ready to defend you if you come within this general 5 feet of me. Otherwise.
If my responsibility declares that I'm taking your defender now.
Anyway, so yeah, Mook Morris, very instrumental in that win over Portland, which was fun. Now the Celtics are kind of creeping up the standings here. They are now 50-23. They've won 3 straight games. They're 3.5 games out of the top seed again. Amazingly. They are 3 back in the loss column, and they play the Raptors twice again. So they still have this outside shot at we've been talking about them solidified in the two spot, but they can go on a little bit of a run here. They could maybe catch Toronto, which would be interesting, to say the least.
It would be pretty wild. It'd be helpful in a potential Eastern Conference finals, but it's going to be pretty difficult to catch up to Toronto. I just think with the way the math works out, they have to win. Like, they absolutely have to win both games to make sure that they have a tiebreaker and to deliver Toronto 2 losses. And then Toronto would still need to lose another game, and the Celtics would have to win the rest of their games. Like, it's a kind of a long shot. They do have like the ability to do that, I think. But I still think the 2 seed's more likely, because now the magic number for them to clinch the 2 seed is only 4 games, and that's just losses between them or Cleveland. But they have life here, and they don't really, other than Toronto, don't have many tough remaining opponents. If I remember correctly.
And I'm not trying to sit there and say I'm dying to get to that first seed. I don't care, but we're here. So they play.
Would be cool.
They play Phoenix.
First is always better.
Of course. They play Phoenix on the back-to-back. So they play tomorrow night or tonight when you listen to the show. So Phoenix, which is a winnable game, Wednesday night at Utah, which will be tough, and then Saturday against Toronto at home. Then on the road, Milwaukee, Toronto, Tuesday, Wednesday, back to back. Friday, Chicago, Sunday, April 8th, Atlanta, Tuesday at Washington, Wednesday against Brooklyn. So
a lot of those teams are tanking actively.
Yes.
Chicago, Atlanta, Phoenix.
Now, the Raptors have Denver at home on Tuesday. Raptors are really good at home. Denver is horrible on the road, so they'll probably win that game. The Celtics game, like we said, Tuesday they are at Cleveland. That's going to be, I don't know what to make of that game, because there's like a message there, but also Cleveland's kind of, I don't know, maybe Cleveland's got something to, a message to send to Toronto. Then they come to Boston. Oh no, they host Boston. That game in Toronto is a back-to-back for Toronto as well. So both the Celtics and the Raptors will be on the back-to-back. Then they play Indiana, who's fighting for playoff position. Then Orlando, Detroit, Sunday, Monday, home road, back-to-back, two terrible teams that they should beat. And then at Miami on April 11th, and Miami will have something to play for. I guess in all of that, I'm not very optimistic. Laying it all like that, I'm not very optimistic in the Celtics doing what they need to do in such a short amount of time to get to that top seed.
Yeah, it's a very difficult road, and I'm in favor of just resting and trying to have everyone, no more surgeries or anyone else missing any other time.
Get ready for a lot of Jabari Bird towards the end.
I'm looking forward to a lot of Jabari Bird. I'd love to see some Anthony Bennett minutes. That'd be a good way to end out the season.
Sure, why not? Maybe
for the fans, you know what? For the diehards.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Before we let's get to Kyrie here. We're gonna do some tweets, and then we'll get to Kyrie. Let's talk about Kyrie's knee, because we haven't had an opportunity to talk about Kyrie's knee. So he's out for 3 to 6 weeks. He had a procedure Saturday to have what's called a tension wire removed from his knee, which I don't know exactly what that means, but it was.
I didn't know he had a wire in his knee. I didn't know that was something he was operating with.
I don't know. I guess it was something that was holding his knee together somehow after the patellar surgery. The patellar, he broke his kneecap, fractured his kneecap. The good news is that entire injury from 2015 has completely healed. His knee is fine. So this thing that was in there from before, they took it out and they looked at everything, and everything's fine. So after he recovers from those, whatever, however long that is, he'll be fine. It should be fine. There's nothing in there that's going to be causing irritation in his knee. So there's a potential. 3 weeks from the procedure is the beginning of the playoffs. So if it goes well and he's a quick healer, we could see him in the first round. So that's good news.
Yeah. And Brad Stevens kind of tried to couch the optimism today, saying it was 3 weeks to return to basketball related activities. So if I was a betting man, which I may be, and I think he's more primed to return probably in that second round, just because I don't think there would be any position to rush things back. From an organizational perspective, I don't think the Celtics think they're a championship team this year, so wouldn't want to risk anything. But I don't know, man. I'm kind of believing the juju of the Celtics get the first round, they win that series. Then I think it probably leans to them playing Cleveland in the second round right now, Cleveland being the 3 seed, them being the 2 seed. And you get Kyrie Irving and Marcus Smart coming back. You got yourselves a series there. I'm already excited for the drama of that and this, like the fun that would be. So I'm kind of actually hoping that Kyrie doesn't come back until a Cleveland series. I think it would just be make for a better screenplay.
That would be, look, I'm down with that. I think there's, because of the schedule, there's a possibility that not Rozier. I'm looking at my notes. Kyrie comes back at some point in the first round. But it depends on, I think it might depend on how that first round is going. If the Celtics feel like something might be getting out of hand, there is, I think, the possibility that they'll say, okay, let's, if it's not going to hurt him, we can bring him back and in kind of minutes restriction and all of that stuff. So look, they are going to do what they need to do for Kyrie's health, but look, there's a financial incentive for the team to continue in the playoffs. The more you play home playoff games, the more money the team gets to make. And
And winning is fun. Like, of course, I'm imagining they're going to want to try and win. They're not going to, like, just throw it away.
No, right. They're going to want to win. And if they can get to a second round, if they can get to a third round, they're going to want to do that. And like I said, there's going to be an incentive for the owners. The owners are going to pay a luxury tax at some point down the road. And I am not going to begrudge the owners if they somehow, and I don't know if there's any way to ever know this, but if they say, look, let's do what we can do to win a couple of extra home games here and make a little money now. So that's going to be money that gets reinvested into the team later. So I'm sure that there's some kind of incentive. It sure as hell is not going to be at the detriment of any players. And I'm not going to suggest that that's going to be the case, but if the team can go out there and win a couple of extra home playoff games and get to another series, they're going to want to do what they can to do that if that possibility exists. So if Kyrie's on the fence and there's a game that he can play and there he's kind of iffy, I wouldn't be surprised if the team kind of like tries to nudge him along a little bit and say, hey, if you're feeling okay, let's give it a shot.
Do you think that's any different based on what happened with Isaiah last year and him kind of playing through pain and it really hurt? Like, if I'm a player, I guess Kyrie's contract situation is different, but if like Marcus Smart, it's kind of hard to assess a Marcus Smart hypothetical because you should just go with the most insane, nonsensical scenario. But if I'm Marcus Smart and I'm going to be restricted free agent, do I push myself to come back from an injury in the playoffs when I could risk further damage, and that's my contract year? And does like the Isaiah thing impact you whatsoever?
I'm sure that there's some, you look at that situation and you say, you know, look what Isaiah went through. But I think that's a different situation. Isaiah's injury was different than a thumb or that knee for Kyrie. So, and I don't know that the Celtics didn't, I don't think they pushed him to play. I think he made the choice that he wanted to play as much as he could. And I think that goes to Isaiah saying like that's who Isaiah is. He just is going to do everything he can to be on the floor for as long as possible. I think when you look at how the Celtics handled that situation, once he said I can't play, then they I think were supportive of him not playing. So but I think it's just a bunch of different situations. So the knee, the thumb, I don't think they're the same as that hip. The hip is much more chronic. So but I wouldn't blame a player like Marcus Smart for looking at the Isaiah situation and saying, you know, he might have cost himself a lot of money, and especially for Marcus, he's becoming a restricted free agent. His value had dropped, and then now it's shot way the hell back up, and he's at the highest point possible. I wouldn't be surprised if I was his agent giving him advice, I'd say don't come back unless you are 100% healthy and ready to go, because it doesn't help anybody to come back, and you're going to hurt yourself.
If I was him, I would tell him the exact same thing if I was his agent, but I just, like, in seeing Marcus Smart play basketball, I feel like he would go out there with, like, a club on his hand. Like, that's his most competitive person there is. I feel like any situation where he had the option, the choice to play or not to play, I feel like Marcus Smart would choose to play. And so if I was his agent, I would advise him of that, but I'd also know that, like, that's just never going to happen because that guy's an insane person and it's awesome.
Totally. Totally is. I mean, look, Marcus Smart's going to do what Marcus Smart wants to do, and I think his...
And that's win basketball right. games. That's the only thing Marcus Smart has ever wanted to do in his
right,
life.
Right,
that and beat up nerds.
But he's it would be hard for him to sit out if he felt like he could play. So I feel like he might be kind of conflicted. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see what he does. I have a feeling that he'll come back in the second round. If he gets medical assurance that by playing there's no risk, just by simply playing, that he's going to re-injure himself, that he'll go out and play. So, but it, like I said, if I'm his agent, I'd be like, look, unless you're 100%, don't go do it, because you run the risk of costing yourself a lot of money if you go out there and do something again and cause permanent damage or whatever. So we'll see how that gets handled. All right, let's wrap this up with some tweets. And we'll start with the Rain and Jays. We ask you to tweet us throughout the day, throughout games, with two different hashtags, Rain and Jays or Rain and Junk. The Rain and Jays are supposed to be the serious sort of basketball questions. Rain and Junk is the not so serious, you know, fuck around and let's have some fun. That's mostly Jam's purview. So let's start with the Rain and Jays. And from at Celtics GRD, how come Walter McCarty left the Celtics so suddenly before the playoffs? I find it odd. I think the answer is simply he got a job as the head coach at Evansville, Indiana.
Yeah.
And
it's basically once that happens, like, you have to be the entire face of the program and recruiting. Like,
yeah.
It's not like he can just wait. Like, once you get hired for that, you immediately have a full-time job as coach. It's not something you can just, like, oh, I'm going to wait till the playoffs end. And so in hearing people talk about it, they say they're going to miss him, but that's why he did it. Yeah. Like, he just got, like, his dream job of where he grew up, which is good for Walter. Some people love Walter. I'm one of those people. I was just trying to make reference to Tom Heinsohn.
Yeah. I love Walter. But
I love Walter.
Once you get that head coaching job, you're gone. And that's something that I'm sure was encouraged by everybody on the staff. And so once he got the job, you know, like, when you're an assistant, you want to become a head coach. You got to take these opportunities. And unfortunately, the timing doesn't work out. They needed a head coach. He got it. And now he's got to go out and get on the road and build that team. And just for his own future, like, I don't think he wants to be, as much as it's great that he's going home and coaching for his hometown college team, he's got, aside from being home, but he went to Kentucky. You know, he doesn't have that close a connection to that place. He's trying to become, you know, he wants to be the next Brad Stevens. He wants to be in the NBA probably, or at least at a higher level, college coach. He's got to work on that team and turn that team around and try to get them to be as good as possible. So he's going to start right away, and so he can get to work on his next job. That's just how it goes. At Jake Isenberg, hope Brad gets some late Coach of the Year love. All right. You want to talk a little Coach of the Year here?
Yeah, because I'm all for Brad Stevens, the bandwagon. Like, there's one simple argument that I think wins him Coach of the Year.
And that is?
This entire team was designed with Gordon Hayward in mind, and he played for 6 minutes, and they just won 50 games. They might win 55 games. That's insane.
Yeah.
Like, the major focus point, the kind of the best player, I think, who the most all-around player on your team, someone who's going to contribute on an elite level at both offense and defense, only plays 6 minutes, and you still win 50, maybe 55 games. Plus, you have a slew of injuries to Kyrie, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown missing some time. I know, like, he shouldn't be discredited just because, like, the Gordon Hayward thing happened so early. Like, it was such a loss of talent, and people have just been, like, accepted the Celtics as not having Gordon Hayward. But, like, no, He put a lot of things together, and they still won 55 games. They win games that they have no business winning. And my best explanation for it is kind of like the Brad Stevens coaching philosophy of just like winning what you like, winning the next possession, like control what you control. I totally believe like the Kaizen approach has a reason for that. How else do you explain the Celtics just randomly being in every, like coming back from 18 points regularly? I think Brad Stevens deserves some credit for that. And he lost Gordon Hayward after 6 minutes. He's the coach of the year. It feels obvious.
So here's how I just pulling back, and because I know that Dwayne Casey is the main challenger here for coach of the year. So I understand the argument. I've made the argument for Dwayne Casey that he got guys to kind of adjust their games this year. That offense has completely changed how they play, which forget about the Celtics for a moment. To get two players in Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan to change how they play at this point in their careers for the betterment of the team is a pretty amazing thing. And to get a bench of guys like, you know, you're getting Fred VanVleet to step up.
Jay King's favorite player.
Favorite guy. Yeah, absolutely. So you're
huge
getting
VanVleet guy.
He's big time VanVleet guy. To get that bench that's so young and to get everything to come together and to make the top seed, that's an incredible coaching job and absolutely deserves to be a coach of the year candidate. The way I see Brad Stevens' candidacy going, I feel like it's kind of like an up down and now we're back in the upswing. So it was up after the Hayward injury and the Celtics won 16 in a row. And now they became the top seed. And it was like, holy shit, they lost Hayward. They're the top seed. Obviously, Brad Stevens is the coach of the year. And then after the London trip, they hit a little bit of a lull. They dipped a bit. Toronto came on the upswing. And then Toronto, everybody started paying attention to Toronto. It's like, oh, look, the Celtics have kind of faltered a little bit. And now Toronto is the darling of the NBA. And let's everybody look at Toronto and make the arguments there. And then Kyrie went down and the Celtics season was kind of like wiped out. Everybody's like, oh, season's over. And now we're going back to the same dynamic that happened at the beginning of the season. Celtics have now won 3 straight games. They beat Portland in Portland. They threw Shane Larkin out there. They're throwing all of these just hodgepodge of rookies and nobodies that are out there on the floor and they're winning these games. And all of a sudden it's like, oh shit. No, right. It should be Brad. Like we're back at the, it doesn't matter who the Celtics have. Brad Stevens will get the most out of those guys. So I feel like now with Kyrie out for a while, with the Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown was out. All of these guys were out and the Celtics are still winning games. I think now we're back at a point where anybody who was on the fence is like, how can you not give it to Brad Stevens? Like this is crazy. He's throwing Semi Ojeleye, Gershon Yabusele, Shane Larkin on the floor at the same time. And these guys are winning games in which that is happening. That makes no sense. So it's got to be Brad.
It's got to be Brad Stevens because he only had like, you talk about Dwayne Casey and his implementing a system, but he mostly had players who he had coached the year before with like, who else? The only new player on that team I can think of is OG Anunoby. I don't know how to say his last name. But like he developed a system. Brad Stevens only had 4 players returning right from any like sort of system. So it was Horford, Rozier, Smart. Who's the last guy? Jaylen Brown, obviously. Key players, but he totally has implemented a new cast of characters and the Celtics are still very good. They're still a top 4 team in the league. It just makes complete sense to me. I'm going to admit I'm quite biased on the issue, but I still think the argument prevails. I understand the argument for Toronto and they've had a very good year. And if it's anyone other than Brad Stevens, Dwayne Casey makes sense to me. But it just feels quite obvious. If you combine the 4 new play, only 4 returning players, losing Hayward, and then all the crazy injuries, it feels like Brad Stevens definitely deserves some recognition for Coach of the Year.
Absolutely. No, I think, and a couple weeks ago, I definitely was like, I can totally see Dwayne Casey getting it. I think, in fact, I thought he should probably get it at that point, but I've kind of turned around and I guess I was riding that Toronto wave for a little bit. Like, all right, I felt like Brad Stevens is probably going to get a bunch of these opportunities to get it. And Dwayne Casey is kind of like in this moment. I feel like if he doesn't get coach of the year, it's just going to fuel the Toronto insecurity to a complete different level, because Toronto is probably the most insecure fan base in the league.
Oh my God, they're so angry.
They're very angry.
Just angry people.
Some of it's a little justified, but some of it's just, you know, it kind of feeds itself.
You hear such nice things about the Canadians,
yeah,
and then you see their online personas, and they're just mean, and they're cruel.
Yeah.
They're just upset all the time.
There's a thing when it comes to talking about Raptors basketball that it triggers them. But it's...
You know what's awesome is seeing them tweet about how much they hate Serge Ibaka. And it's just like, I've just been following some new Raptors people, and they're just constantly shitting all over Serge Ibaka. And I think back to the trade deadline of yesteryear, where Terry Rozier for Serge Ibaka was an idea, and people were furious that Danny Ainge didn't trade Terry Rozier and a first, I think, for Serge Ibaka.
Right.
And now just to see all these Raptors, angry people just yell about Serge Ibaka, it warms my heart. It's fantastic. It makes me so happy online.
Totally.
And it's the exact opposite of being
absolutely
online. It's just like a huge grin, these angry Raptors fans.
It's so great because it was supposed to be like, of course you trade Rozier and a number one for Ibaka. You're an idiot if you don't. Like, that was the whole thing. And it wasn't even about Rozier. It was about, I don't want to trade a pick for a rental. And now it turns out to be freaking genius, because you should, if you traded Rozier, if they had Rozier playing like he did now, like they'd be up by 10 games in the top spot. So maybe there's a little hyperbole there, but still, damn it.
That's what this, yeah.
Quick note from at nice D7. Brad just yelling, great job at Jabari Bird the whole time on defense. Just warms my heart. You know, Brad's a supportive guy.
Us too. I didn't notice it, but I'm glad you did, because it's warming my heart right now.
Let's get to the rain and junk. The at Touche Bagouche, Tito doubling up on the ropes for his post game. Two chains for three sticks. Hashtag two chains for three sticks. Yep. Tito was out there with a couple of nice thick chains in his post game interview.
Oh yeah, he looked good in the post game interview. A couple donkey ropes on there. It was cool. He's just a cool guy, man. 33 points. I didn't have much other rain and junk for the night. I did like Adi Shepard saying it's all about that hoop life, a reference to one of the great Tito vines, all about that cook life.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, that's the only rain and junk that I have for this evening. I was a little distracted tonight by 60 Minutes. They had a great segment on Giannis Antetokounmpo, and while I was waiting to watch that, there's this whole Stormy Daniels thing that was also quite interesting.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing that we won't talk about here. Touche Bagouche. I'm trying to keep this thing together. We'll end on this because we've got to do this. I think Tito 36 punches his ticket to the big Australian boat 30 minutes into this game with that corner heat check. Let's do a boat.
He's driving the boat, baby.
Let's do the
captain.
Boat. Yeah. Okay. So
Captain Tito drives that boat.
So do we have to do the boat like differently to this time around? If he's on the, if he's captain of the boat, then we gotta like dress it up. Like, we gotta make this a Tito boat. I don't know.
You're just gonna come correct. I mean, just only cool guys on the boat. That's the rule.
That's it. So. I'd put Jaylen Brown on the boat for his return from the concussion and having a nice game for returning from the concussion. 19 points tonight, and just not dying, coming back and being alive. I think that's
Yeah. Well, does that performance deserve the spot on the Tito boat? Because I have another nomination that would be Marcus Morris for balling the fuck out and hitting a game winning shot.
Totally.
He feels like a Tito boat candidate first ballot.
Look, Jaylen, we've seen Jaylen dress up. Like, Jaylen gets on that boat. Jaylen's a cool motherfucker. He gets on the Tito boat. No doubt about it.
All right, let's get both Jaylen and Moog on the boat.
Jason Tatum? Does Jason Tatum get on the boat?
Hell yeah. That dude's been balling the fuck out. He's like really stepped up with a more increased opportunity. It's been fun to see. It feels like he was Stella and Stella got her groove back.
I don't even.
Yeah. How do you like that random ass Whoopi Goldberg reference from the 1990s?
That is wild. I don't even know what to make of that. I am completely thrown for a loop on that reference.
All right, let's add more people to the boat then with Sugar Shane Larkin.
Yeah, let's put Shane Larkin on the boat. You know who I want to put on the boat? So Shane's on. I'm going to put Al Horford on the boat just because it'll piss so many people off. And
yeah, just to spite Lou Maloney. Like, why not?
Because he, against Portland, not the biggest game against Portland with 11 points and 3 rebounds, but in the fourth
quarter.
In the fourth quarter, he made a bunch of plays down the stretch during that comeback, and was instrumental in that comeback. And then today against the Sacramento Kings, had a nice little game, 14 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds, 6 of 10 shooting. Not, again, the biggest game in the world, but I'm putting Al Horford on the boat because anybody who is upset at Al Horford and is listening to this, you hate that choice and fuck you. That's why.
We need to start talking about Al Horford and just calling him Al Horford, the best defensive player on the team, or the best defensive team in the league. Like, he doesn't get a reputation for being this amazing defender, but he is.
Yeah.
He is the anchor of the league's best defense. Yep. Like, he should be talked about like that. He has that much value and no one mentions that whatsoever. He's on the boat for sure because hopefully people get upset about
that. Yes, that's it. All right.
Just to piss people off. That's a Tito boat. We're rambunctious. Right. We're loud. We're partying. Having a great time.
Absolutely. All right. That'll do it. If you are a first-time listener, we hope you enjoyed this wild ride. And we hope you enjoyed it enough to subscribe to the show. Find Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, be sure to follow me on Twitter, RedsArmy_John, and Sam at JamPackard. For all sorts of shenanigans and weirdness, because it can get weird sometimes on Twitter, and we are embracing the weirdness.
Yo, can I shout out my Instagram?
Oh, yeah. Shout out your Instagram for sure.
White Black Frank White. I really started doing a lot of boomerang videos back and forth of Simpsons cartoons, and it's great content. So at White Black Frank White, if you want to see some dumb Simpsons clips on my Instagram story.
I'm down with dumb Simpsons clips. That's kind of like my life. So I enjoy that. That's part of your brand. And
thank you.
If you are a subscriber, please leave us a good review, a 5-star review, and a 5-star rating and a good review, and share, spread the word, let the world know that they should be following us, the Locked On Celtics podcast. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network.